Hello, and welcome back to the 13th Metroplexity podcast. Kind of crazy. Baker's Dozen. Or lucky or unlucky, I guess, depending on how you roll with that. This is Kinnack, also known as Landon Winkler. I will be trying to get through this entire podcast without sounding like Raistlin, but I am recovering from a pretty vicious bit of a cold, so if it goes mute or there's terrible hacking on the line, it's probably just me, not a, you know, pneumonic plague victim. Alright, well, let's see, I guess I should probably do the recap. There's been a lot going on of late. Since the last podcast, we did have the Survivor's Quest rollout. Also went off to Gen Con and came back and was sick for a bit and continued being sick. Went out camping this weekend, which is fairly exciting. So I'm just going to kind of ramble through those in my usual aimless manner. The Survivor's Quest, I think, rollout went spectacularly well. I was expecting, not necessarily more bugs, but definitely worse bugs. The sheer weight of them was still kind of overwhelming. I'm not sure if I'll ever really get around that, but the severity of the bugs, there were definitely, don't recall getting anything that I couldn't just look at and say, well, that can chill for a day. See, as promised, horrible hacking sounds. So, yeah, that went really well, and people seem to be pretty pleased with it. I've gotten some variety of good feedback. See, Gen Con was fantastic. This is where I got the con crud, of course. Need to go in a containment suit next time, I'm pretty sure, is the modus operandi. Got to meet Glass and Shard, which was very cool. We sat around and had a kind of phenomenal amount of sangria. Made less phenomenal by how weak the sangria was, but very tasty. And chatted about stuff. Metroplexity, life, Monsterpocalypse, which you should all go buy from Privateer Press, and so on and so forth. I bought a bunch of Pathfinder books because the co-worker of Liz's that we were going along with, and Liz and I decided that we were going to start a Pathfinder game when we got back. Pathfinder for the not tabletop-y or not super plugged in folks listening is a version of 3rd edition D&D, which is a little sort of forked off from the main code base, if you will. 3rd edition, pretty much anyone could make a variant of it, but as Wizards of the Coast was winding down their support for 3rd edition, Paizo Publishing used to do Dungeon and Dragon magazine before Watsi yanked the rights on them, went ahead and created their own variant, fixed upon some balance issues, stuff like that. Simplified the rules in a bunch of places. Anyway, that's what we're playing now. We actually had our first session last night. Which reminds me, I have had people ask before about, like, games that I've been running and whatnot. And this one I'm doing a fair bit of prep on the computer, so it would be fairly trivial to, dump it into another wiki.wiki or something like that. So if people are interested in that at all, it would take me all of, like, you know, 10 minutes a week or something, so not a lot of time investment on my part. So if enough people are justified to make it worth, like, 10 minutes a week, then just go ahead and give me a holler. First session went well, but I'll try to get to that. Going through order, let's see. Oh, got some new Shadowrun stuff, too, which surprises probably no one who is familiar with Shadowrun, plays Metroplexity. A lot of good stuff. They have a new corporate guide. Well, I guess corporate guide's been out for a bit, but I just got it. which isn't, I don't love quite as much as the old corporate shadow files, which taught me all that I know about, like, crazy stock trading maneuvers and options, because Shadowrun's just hardcore like that. But definitely still quality. And they have a Vice book out now, which I'm going to be reading when I get done with the corporate book. So, yeah, there's that. And then a week of being absolutely terribly not going into work, sitting around feeling sorry for myself, sick. Which I don't remember very clearly. So, we'll assume that nothing exciting happened there. Possibly I was taken off an experiment, but not by aliens. Can't prove otherwise. And then, yeah, kind of, oh, went out camping last weekend, which was, several kinds of exciting, most of which, I guess, are not podcast-worthy. Well, I guess, other than seeing a giant swarm of turkey vultures with a good sense of the macabre roosting in a dead tree-like twisted fruit, because that's always pretty sweet. Other than that, good camping experience, both canoeing, etc. And got back, ran the first Pathfinder game, have the party of no spellcasters, which is just kind of funny. We've got Monk, Rogue, Barbarian, and Ranger. So the Ranger will be casting spells in like 4 levels. But they fought off some gnolls and found the first of many, many, many horribly intertwined plot threads. So I'm sure that also doesn't surprise anyone. So that's what's been up in my life. I will possibly have more to say about the Survivor's Quest if I think about it during the podcast or, you know, random other stuff. But for now, I'm just going to jump into the questions. We do seem to have a ton, although probably not quite as many as last time, which is fine. Hopefully I won't spend most of it coughing. All right, first up, we got a whole batch from Al. Can the thing we're missing from the elegantly torn pants be done at any time or just under certain conditions? Thank you for bagging that up for me. But I'm not really sure what wouldn't be under certain conditions. I mean, I guess there could be, like, a passive bonus that you're just missing that's on all the time, which I guess could be kind of cool. But I mean, almost anything has some trigger or another. So, yeah, I guess, yes, it's the thing that you're missing only applies under certain circumstances. Also, why in the new Writhing Mass Combat under the lake does it explicitly tell you that you get 1 energy of Watery Grave, whereas the similar encounter on the surface silently gives you 1 energy of End of Pit without telling you? Probably because I coded them differently. The In a Pit encounter was coded before I put in the ability to run arbitrary stuff before combat. So it's manually granting the buff rather than using the normal buff code. I could probably go ahead and switch it back. I'll make a note of that. I might do something else weird too, actually, now that I think about it. Okay. Do all floors of the damaged building have some kind of condition we must satisfy before we can cross them? Well, I mean, you have to walk across the floor. So, yes, I guess. Can the sparring plans currently still drop? If not, how would you plan to get on us to get... Wow, I fail at English here. Can the sparring ring plans currently still drop? They never drop. They're out of the item database, though, so the answer there is know, however you want to interpret drop. If not, how did you plan us on us getting them? I think I'll play that one closer to my chest. I might end up reusing it, reusing the mechanic since nobody found it. And I'm still a little ticked about the circumstances around its revelation, so not feeling especially giving on questions about that. On all the other major quest announcements in the dev blog, there are play features, but not for the survivors. I like the anticipation of seeing vague hints about what you're about to explore. Oh, wow. Yeah, I totally forgot to do that. Yeah, that's all me. I'll try to remember to do that in the future. How did you make the survivors quest so awesome? A lot of work. And a lot of planning. But... yeah, I mean, there are parts of the Survivor's Quest that are really, really old. Like, Lowe's part has been in the game for a long, long time. Just kind of inaccessible. Like, when people were going through and asking me about stuff, it was like, I don't know. our monthly reset board's still in the works. Probably, I want to have a sort of conversation about that. Related to the reset item, reset contest monthly rotation of items, sort of thing. And if I do a rotation of items, which I almost assuredly will be doing, I will tie in a monthly reset mechanic to work with that, with maybe a category or two with different rewards, but at least one category with some sort of reward, which will probably be on the lines of, like, the Extreme Bass Fishing 13 rewards, that sort of thing. So nothing like, terrifying and amazing and game-breaking, but more along the lines of, just neat EP sort of stuff. Are there any new skills available with the Survivor's Quest? Yes. I don't think anybody has found any of them. Which is kind of funny. But the, I mean, unless you're counting the Ghoul Quest as part of it, which it kind of is, and kind of isn't. Obviously people have found some skills in there, but unless I'm mistaken, I might be. I'd have to double check the exact numbers. But I would be willing to say, like at least 60% chance that there are more skills undiscovered right now than there have been at any other point in the game. Maybe right when I first released the Ghost Ship Quest. Because there were the 9 in there. That's a lot of skips. Let's see. Which brands was your favorite to make, least favorite, most work? Favorite was definitely David's branches. Just because there's a lot of neat stuff in there. And a lot of content. Least favorite? I'd probably say Dr. Amundsen's slash Hell's if she's dead. Not because there was anything particularly terrible about it, but just the quest itself, there isn't a lot there. Most of it was already, you know, stuff that I had rolled out, you know, like the entire hacking system. so that quest itself was kind of a drop in and go. Most work, definitely David's. Oh my god, David's. Especially when you consider that the second Ghoul Quest is also kind of, for design purposes, also part of David's. So, like, probably about, like, half, if not slightly more, of the total content that went in is in David's Quest. What's your plan for the future of the game now that this big step is in? Well, I've definitely got my eye on Old Town. I won't be starting work on it immediately by any means. There's a lot of storyboarding, if you will, that I have to do. And then some of which I actually did while I was camping, which is enjoyable. And then a little bit of, obviously I'll need to request the art, so forth. And finish all that up. And of course the map. There's going to be, I actually have a lot of the art for Old Town already, so Puyo won't be a real, real bottleneck here. It's just going to, it'll definitely still take, hopefully not as long as the Shrek's Quest, but it'll be a bit. My actual more immediate goals are, Halloween content. I don't think I'm crazy enough to try and put in anything else before Halloween. I might get in, either a bit of a hacking update, a bit of a gang update, or both. But that seems pretty unlikely. I think that would be unrealistic, 'cause there's a lot of stuff going in for Halloween that I need to get moving on. But yeah, it'll be that. And there are two big, I don't want to say big, but well, there are two entire systems that are going in probably before Old Town goes in, being Cybernetics and one that I will let people find on their own because I haven't even mentioned it as of yet. That ties into a side quest, and there will be a bit of a world event at some point, some new features that goes in that I would expect early next year for the world event. Which I guess would probably put Old Town sometime in next year. Just guessing. Maybe I'll get a bunch of work done in November and jump ahead of the game, but kind of burned from trying to figure out how long the Survivor's Quest will take, but we'll see. Consider showing the numbers of Survivor's Quest people have done in the leaderboard, perhaps with a note that says that it won't count for prizes. All that info is out there, but it's slow to click on everyone's profile on the list to see it. It's a complete pain to show it in the table. That's not true. I mean, it would just be an extra query. And it wouldn't be the end of the world to have one more thing to sort it down by. The reason that it doesn't show up, though, is very much why you're saying that there should be a note. It doesn't matter for prizes at all. So if you reset and none of those other numbers go up, you're not making progress on that front. So I guess that's impressing that on people who are interested in this from a contest perspective is probably worth not having that listed. But if a bunch of people are going to, you know, go through and click through everyone's profiles like rabid monkeys, I'll probably just have to go ahead and either remove it from people's profiles or add it to the table, just so that the server doesn't hate us all. So I guess if you want me to either remove it from people's profiles or add it to the table, click through profiles like a rabid monkey. Otherwise, leave it alone. Know that it doesn't actually matter at all. What's the depth column about? My unfounded theory is that it's the number of times you've accumulated all of the unique skills you have. on track at all. I think I'll leave that for people to figure out. Also, comment. You're very good at making things seem random, which are in fact not random at all, e.g. the shark. Well done. Thank you. When you add a new limited time technique like the intertwined serpent splitting, do you justify the coding time to yourself by planning future in-game opponents that might do something similar, or is it just for that occasion? Do you make an effort to add new mechanics with each release, or do you want to be able to just add things to the database eventually with no special coding? Something like the intertwined serpents or the giant snowman are coded on the back end. They're not, like, run purely from the database. Although, actually, now that I think about it, there's a way that I could code that. I put that into the database. Not sure if it's worth it, but I mean, it would be easier now that I've done it. The doing staged fights like the giant snowman is fairly easy, actually. And once I got through, it's a little bit of trickery that I'm not sure if anyone even noticed, but it was necessary for the intertwined serpents to work correctly. That took me a better part of a day to get working properly. But that having been done, being able to do that again in the future won't be terribly difficult. I mean, there's a lot of stuff, even just with the basic fight mechanics that hasn't been done yet, so when I need a cool boss for something like that, I kind of drag them out. And other times, there are cool mechanics like that that either don't get noticed or don't get noticed for a long time, like Dr. Johnson. Can we now get the thing that was previously not obtainable from the Midgard player now that Survivors is out? Yes. Presuming that it's not broken or anything. Yeah, it should be fine. Are there any rogue AI programs in the world of Metroplexity? Safe to say yes. Okay. fair divergence warning. You can stop listening to me in a bit. This is the wrath of someone who's taken nominally graduate level AI courses for too many years. There's probably no good way to tell the difference between a rogue AI and any other autonomous bit of code. Insofar as there are things that people would call rogue AIs that, I mean, we can assume that they might pass the Turing test, but you know that even if they could, everyone would just change the rules and be bitches. Which is my entire complaint with AI. AI is purely the realm of trying to do stuff that people say it is impossible for computers to do, that as soon as you do it, clearly was never AI, and actually need to do this other thing. It's insanely frustrating. If you have any empathy for for the poor people working on it all, reading any sort of like history of AI is just makes me at least want to beat people to death. It's just yeah. Anyway, yeah, that's just. So aside from that, there are definitely rogue autonomous programs wandering around out there. Actually, I have art for a couple of them, and they just haven't come up yet. You've hinted at undiscovered content from the University Quest content. Does this have anything to do with spectral patients? Is there anything to be done with them other than fight them? Well, they do serve a fairly interesting purpose in the on the item side of the game. There's not a lot going on there with the patients. They'll show up again if that makes you feel any better. Maybe I'll add something more in there then, but for the moment there isn't anything of great interest. When asking Dr. Thomas for Eclipse the second time a day, does supplying the third eye with Eclipse not count as something big? Alright, so the quote that she says, either wait until tomorrow or bring you something big. Does supplying the third eye with Eclipse not count as something big? Unless I screwed up the coding, you can still talk to her about giving the third eye Eclipse after you've gotten your shipments for the day. Which is what she's saying. If you can't do that, I'll need to fix something. But you should be able to get your shipment for the day, get a hawk to agree with everything, fight off the hammer, etc., etc., and come back to Dr. Thomas and say, hey, the third eye wants Eclipse, and she will take care of it for you. And that's exactly what she's talking about. That's actually why the Bring Me Something Big is in there. Is it actually possible to make to the office in the buried... Oh, I'm sorry. Moving on to some questions from Cryptodynamic. Is it actually possible to make to the office in the buried lab without someone activating the Omega Order? The code's definitely there. I don't know if it's... Well, I can tell you that it certainly isn't easy, but it should be possible. Is more achromatic stone going to make it into the game? Are we going to have to render holes down and filter through what's left of left to extract trace amounts of the part of he ingested? More the latter. Will you ever be able to see the as yet unnamed female reporter when watching TV? I guess I could add mention of her to the one of the news broadcasts. But she doesn't have her own show or anything. She's just a field reporter for one of the local stations. If Yggdrasil's Midgard's failed attempt to go toe-to-toe with Zaibatsu, does that mean there's some Zaibatsu's game out there that we might be able to take a peek at? Yes, at some point, probably. At some point, I will introduce something delightfully meta with that. Largely for my own amusement rather than for plot advancement. Which means it will probably get put off and put off and put off until I just, you know, snap under the pressure of its sheer awesomeness and put it in. You will definitely see that. You might have to wait for a really long time. Played any good games, video or otherwise, lately? I mentioned I've been playing Pathfinder. Let's see. I'm sure I've been playing other games. Been reading a fair amount of D&D 4th edition like blogs and stuff, but I haven't actually been playing it. Downloaded Pip for my iPhone, which is a die rolling program, which is fantastic. And I got an iPhone, which is not related to video games, typically. Yeah, I think the last video game that I played, other than Metroplexity, is Super Mario Crossover, which is pretty fantastic, but I'm not that much better at it than I was at the original Mario Brothers, which is to say I still die a lot. It's kind of sad. Let's see. Oh, I played Ergo, I guess, a couple of nights ago, which is... A non-collectible static deck card game. It's basically it's a deck of cards that has letters in it for variables and various logical operators, and you're putting out propositions, basically. And so each player is assigned a variable, so like I'm A and you're B, and I'm trying to prove that A is true on the table. And while if the game ends, well, if the round, I should say, ends while A is true, I get points. If it ends while B is true, you get points. Or we can both get points, or neither get points, as the case may be. So you're laying down cards, modifying the propositions, and creating a sort of ongoing tug of war between the up to four, in this case, players, which is pretty neat. The rules for it are terrible, which is really kind of funny, because, like, there's this sort of metagame around it, which is, like, trying to figure out how the logic of the rules work. Like, the way they explain order of operations could be read either you do and or implies in that order, or it could just as easily be read you do imply ors and that, you know, obviously changes things. And there are a couple of other things, like they have two examples of how the order of operations works, and one of them is consistent with the and or implies, and the other one is just completely gibberish. Just pretty, I don't know. It's there's this delightful sort of metagame in there, which would normally, like, just bug the hell out of me. But in considering the subject matter, is almost kind of endearing. Let's see. I'm sure I played some other stuff at Gen Con, and never actually did get to demo Monster Apocalypse with Glass. Well, I did True Dungeon at Gen Con, which is, like, the best thing ever. We all got eaten by a dragon this year. Like, everyone got eaten by a dragon. Except for Will Wheaton. I'm going to tell a True Dungeon story, because this is, like, of course, third hand at this point, so take it with a grain of salt, but the level of awesomeness cannot be contained to Gen Con alone, so I must spread it when possible. So True Dungeon, which I've raved about before, but if you haven't heard my previous raves, is at Gen Con, they take one of the, well, basically, like, all of the ballrooms in the Marriott and make a actual, like, 1-to-1-2-scale dungeon. And you head through with your party and do puzzles, mostly, and combats using a variant of the D&D rules. More like D&D 3rd edition, because it's been around for a while and haven't seen any need to update for 4th, I guess. And the loot is tokens, like poker chips, almost. The rolling mechanic for combat, so the only time, like, the monsters will roll, like, they have this huge red d20 at the table that they roll for the monster attacks and stuff like that, when you're attacking as a player, you put your token in this little slider, you kind of slide it a little bit like shuffleboard almost, but, you know, just with your hands, not with the weird shuffleboard broom thing, towards the outline of the monster, and different areas of it are labeled with, you know, like, its eyes are 20, and, you know, the back of its neck is 19, and so forth, and then that plus your, that's basically what you would have rolled on a d20, so you got the 20, you crit, and do a bunch of extra damage, etc., etc. So, we're going through, and we've had, there are 8 rooms, pretty sure there are 8 rooms. We've had a bunch of puzzles, which we've done pretty well at, taking some damage from screwing up puzzles, but gotten through the puzzles, gotten through a couple of combats, including a gelatinous cube, which it just tugs at my ancient D&D player heartstrings. But and we get to the end. There's a dragon, like giant, like actual animatronic dragon. Which is fantastic. And it's got this huge horde, which is entirely made up of the tokens that they use, so it's both very, you know, iconic dragon standing over a pile of gold looking, and referential to the fact that we're using tokens for all of our loot. And actually, I'm not sure if anyone noticed at the time, but apparently the dragon's own magical items were tokens. Like, it had like a headband of wizardry or something that was a token on a headband around like the huge animatronic dragon, which is just fantastic. It did not actually breathe fire, which is good, because, you know, I would probably have been on fire at that point. But, so, you know, really hard fight. We all made it through. Like, the entire rest of the dungeon was basically getting a magical item that'll protect you from this breath weapon once. Get breathed on once, the magical item's used up. We slide, we do, like, maybe 20 or 30 points of damage. Out of, as it turns out, like, 150 hit points that the dragon has. Liz, being our rogue, grabbed its egg, and so it didn't breathe on us that round. It attacked her instead and killed her. Did like 30 points of damage with the bite, and we were like third level characters in the game. So, kills her. We blow a magical item, bring her back, and then it breathes on us, and it's like 60, save for half, which is still 30. So we all die, including Liz again. Anyway, so this is all leading up to a much more important story, which is not about me. So there's also they did a VIP run of True Dungeon for sort of like the celebrity guests. So it was Will Wheaton and the cast of The Guild. And if you've never watched The Guild, the only one you're probably familiar with is Felicia Day, because she, among other things, was the female lead in Dr. Horrible Sing-Along Blog, which if you have not seen, you must see. It's, like, required by law. It's Joss Whedon doing a supervillain musical. It's out of this world. Anyway. So they're going through, and, among other things, like, when you come into the Gelatinous Cube Room, there's a guy who, like, grabs your lead party member and shoves you into the, you know, just kind of, like, rods and, like, glittery cellophane stuff, gelatinous cube. So, like, you know, our paladin got, you know, grabbed and shoved into the gelatinous cube. And apparently, Felicia Day was leaving their party, and whoever was supposed to grab their lead person, shove them into the gelatinous cube, was like, I can't do it. Like, I cannot, like, grab Felicia Day. I can't handle it. So they had to sub somebody else in. But they get to the end, and they've all been kind of, like, twinked, I believe, by the people running it. So, you know, like, Will Wheaton has, you know, like, the plus one spear of dragon slaying that, you know, does crazy extra damage and so forth. So, like, they're not in as bad a shape as we were. But they're still missing, like, Cal, because, you know, I mentioned it's kind of like shuffleboard, dragon board. It was just, like, the other ones, like, he kind of, like, push it gently, and you'd get, like, a third of the way up the board, maybe, like, hit his foot or something, and, like, push a little harder and get up towards the end. It was, like, you would push gently, and it would just, like, shoot straight to the end of the board. It was, in addition to the fact that it was a dragon, it was not very easy to hit, just, mechanically. But, so, like, whiff, and, they have an alternate audio track for the VIP run, so it starts with its first chunk of the alternate audio track. It starts making fun of Will Wheaton. I'm referencing, like, Stand By Me and Big Bang Theory and a bunch of other things that Will Wheaton has done, other than Wesley Crusher, which is probably for the best. He's in the game. Will Wheaton actually plays D&D, to the best of my knowledge. At least he has played D&D with the Penny Arcade guys, so he's actually, like, barely into geek culture at one level or another. So, you know, he's doing his thing. GM's like, I think the dragon's talking to you. He says, I think that dragon's making fun of me. And slides his, you know, plus one spear of dragon slaying, lands it right on the 20 with the max damage, one-shots it. And so that apparently is one of the seven or so groups that actually killed the dragon by Will Wheaton just, you know, one-shotting it, because he's Will fucking Wheaton. And the other thing about that that was bad is that he was apparently collecting dice over the course of the weekend. The DM proceeded after, I think, probably, like, making funny noises, gave him the giant red D20, which he apparently carried around for him for at least much of the rest of the con, which it's, like, the size of, like, a... not quite a fist, so a funny thing to carry around as treasure for the rest of the con. But I guess that's neither here nor there. That's very much my only Will Wheaton story, other than the fact that Liz and I are currently watching through Next Generation from the beginning. So it's really weird to, like, have any even, like, faint interactions with, like, grown-up Will Wheaton, because, like, I never really saw the beginning of Next Gen, so, like, my current Next Gen input has, like, wearing terrible sweaters, Wesley Crusher, Will Wheaton. On that note, have you ever played Minecraft? This is back to Cryptodynamics questions. I've seen it, on the tubes. I have not actually played it. It seems a little sandboxy for me. I need a little more direction than that, which I guess might sound a little weird coming from me, I'm not really sure, but there's certainly a limited amount of, I like some sandboxiness, but not too much sandboxiness, and it looks like it's past the event horizon of sandboxiness for me. Okay, moving on to Slag Runner, or Glass, based on what's been posted on the wiki. How did we do as far as finding all the Metroplex Day 2010 content? I guess it kind of continues on the next one. Was there anything we missed? If so, how much was undiscovered? Will be featured again in 2011. Let's see. I'm fairly sure nobody actually defeated the Intertwined Serpents, figured out how to do that. I'm also fairly sure nobody got to the actual grand finale. So those two things were missed, at least from what's on the wiki. I could probably double check everybody's character politics, but that sounds like a lot of work. There is something that will be lost to the mists of time, not in a mechanical sense, really, but in a, you'll realize what had been lost the previous 2 years when you finally find it, at some point in the future. But it's safe to say that there will be probably more stuff next Metroplex Day. But if I leave it just kind of to its own devices, it will launch again identically. There's only a... Well, Yeah. So, alright. Moving on, we've got some questions from Happy Eddie. Oh, actually, funny side note from Gen Con. So, Glass and Shard and Liz and myself are sitting in one of the establishments near the convention center in Indy, and we're talking, and I don't remember what Glass asked me, but I gave some answer that was probably about as vague as that. He was like, "You can't do that to me. We are in person. You cannot just drop by, say something cryptic, and then leave. Like, it does not work that way." And I don't remember how that ended up. I may have actually managed to change the subject. I don't entirely recall. But I just thought that was kind of a funny interaction. Okay, all right. On to Happy Eddie's questions. Time for some baseless plot backstory questions, which I doubt you'll answer, but oh well. The Corps all seem to have their thing, even if they make all kinds of stuff. Omnitech has polysteel and all the cheap consumer junk made from it. Zaibatsu has more decent consumer electronics. Before the incident, what was Midgard's thing? Midgard's primary thing is drone manufacture. Like, by far and away, they're the biggest and, they would say the best drone manufacturers. And that's probably legitimately true, other than, like small bespoke houses that, like, can make really expensive drones for specific tasks, that sort of thing. They do good work, in their narrow sort of area. And obviously they also do all kinds of other stuff, but that's their bread and butter. And it still is. Speaking of polysteel, is Omnitech the biggest corp in the world? This stuff seems like the holy grail of, well, everything. Omnitech and Zaibatsu are about the same size. Zaibatsu, they're the other half of Zaibatsu that you're missing is that they basically own entertainment. So if you were to take, like, decent, like, higher-end consumer electronics, like, we'll say, Sony, and were to add in, like, most of Hollywood, and, like, maybe Bollywood, and, like, maybe, like, well, like, the anime houses in Japan that produce that stuff, and, like, a bunch of video game companies, and the fact that they're the ones who own the proprietary technology to make, and view neural recordings, so... I guess one way to think of it is that Omnitech and Zaibatsu are kind of the two forces that make make the world run in a lot of ways. Omnitech makes all of the cheap, terrible crap, and Zaibatsu makes all of the things that make you not worry quite as much about all of your cheap, terrible crap, and just kind of feeds back and forth. But those two definitely form the first tier of the corporations. You cannot... The only way, really, to get away from Omnitech is to be in a Zaibatsu compound. And the only real way to get away from Zaibatsu is to be in an Omnitech compound. There's really no other way to completely get out of their grasp. Midgard is pretty firmly in the second tier. So if you run into drones, a lot of them will be Midgard. Zaibatsu and Omnitech both have their own proprietary drone divisions, but they're not, they're not quite as good, or they're very, very specialized. Like Zaibatsu, would be more likely to have, like very, very humanoid drones. And Omnitech's drones are super cheap, but not very effective, kind of like everything else that Omnitech makes. Like, if you wanted a Roomba, you could probably get it through Omnitech, that sort of thing. When Midgard's, you know, making entirely autonomous, like, guard robots and digging machines and stuff like that. Let's see, is X Heimdall and Watson's new corporate code name? No comment. Did patient 2946 create the fish people? I think if you... Oh. Actually, I think that you're missing a piece of information that I was about to reference to. When you find the piece of information that I wanted to reference there, if you think a bit more about the light in that piece of information, and kind of whenabouts that would all fit together, I think you'll be able to answer that question more easily. Can any current create any ethereal people if they have enough eclipse pumped into them? You and Midgard would both like to know that. The answer would seem to be probably no. in that there are a lot of people taking a lot of Eclipse and still a rather finite number of creatures wandering around. Finite number of types of creatures. But it could just be that not that many people get that much Eclipse in their system. Can you give another hint about Dr. Johnson? Let's see. There's some text about her in the Survivor's Quest that might be of interest. Actually, there's quite a bit about her in the Survivor's Quest. So, I guess I will wait for folks to uncover that. I'm not sure exactly what hints you're asking about, like, whether she's, you know, secretly Dr. Emmonson, or, like, are you looking for, like, what her day job is? Anyway, not sure. Is there something undiscovered about the blown glass trinket? Nothing that leaps to mind, but I also feel like I should be cackling maniacally. So, let's go with a maybe on that one. I don't remember putting anything really, like, cleverly hidden there, but it's entirely possible. I've just forgotten. It's been a while. Is there anything you want to tell us about the Oaktown quest? It doesn't matter if it's something you may change later. Sure. Let's see. Well, I mentioned before that the Old Town Quest is first place where you'll get ready access to, like, commercial-grade cybernetics. That's why the cybernetics system is going in, either shortly before or when the Old Town Quest rolls out. There's actually a really neat area that's inspired by, I want to say something Argus said, which probably won't help, because every time I've said that in the past, even when I have, like, written documentation of Argus suggesting that, he always seems to be like, wow, I suggested that? That seems like actually a really good idea, and I'm glad I suggested that, because I totally don't remember. But I'm pretty sure it was Argus. Suggested that is actually ties into the quest and will probably, no promises yet, probably be the new PvP zone when Old Town rolls out. There'll be some really neat stuff there involving sort of the mundane and the etheric halves of reality in that area. I agree with the others that a map would be nice, a napkin would be enough. I keep wondering how the slags are situated. I can talk it out real quick, if that makes anybody feel any better. Okay, so the slags are the farthest south point that you've seen so far in Metroplex. The south side is actually north and a bit west of the slags, and it's part of the reason why south side is abandoned now, because it's too close to the slags. Everybody wanted to get the hell out, because nobody's sure how... you don't want to say abandoned, but abandoned by people who would, you know, pay to live there. Because nobody knew how bad the fallout was really going to be. The answers there are still kind of an open question. So, whether everybody there will get cancer in a couple of years is worth wondering about in a humanitarian sense. Basically due north of the slags, even farther than the south side, are the docks. So the docks a little bit further north of south side, and to the east, right along the river. Along the lake, I'm sorry. River. But they're all clustered fairly close together. So don't think like the docks are not like clear across town from the slags. So it's kind of like slags, blank area to the west, south side to the north of that, blank area to the east in the, and then just north of that blank area, you've got the docks. So when you swim down between the two lake zones, it's a little weird, but it's not actually all that far, between, the docks and slides. And then University is, further, like, northwest of all of those and into town. So it's kind of like the cluster, and then the University is a bit further up. And Old Town is, further off from there towards, more towards downtown, which is even further north of the university. There's, like, some nice, like, once you get past the docks and keep going and going, you actually get to some fairly nice, like, sections that aren't horribly slagged or corrupted by industrialness. You're obviously nowhere near those yet. So I hope that helped. When trying to get rid of the hammer, your character finds out he has a tracking chip in his forehead. Some ways of dealing with the hammer get rid of this chip, otherwise it stays there and is not mentioned anywhere else. Since we're going to go muck around with Midgar, and Lo already suspects that we were once connected to it, it's kind of strange Lo never checks us for something that could come back to bite us later. That thread is open, I guess, is about the best thing I can say about that. This is more of a selfish content suggestion. Could you somehow put in a skill connected with the mushroom people like Ocean Eyes for the fish people? Please? Pretty please? I think you will be pleasantly surprised by some of the stuff that they have. They won't get quite the, they don't get quite the same treatment as, Ocean Eyes and, Fae Eyes, due for the mage races. They are kind of a subordinate race. And it's unlikely that will change, although at some point, I'm sure that there will be a side quest that will let you liberate them, but that's a ways off. People live in... Oh, this is a question for Meg. People who live in New York are New Yorkers. People who live in Chicago are Chicagoans. People who live in Baltimore are Baltimoreans. Hey, I can say that. I used to be one. I do not used to be one. I make no claim to the relative intelligence of Baltimoreans. What do you call inhabitants of the Metroplex? Metroplexers? Metroplexans? Metroplexians? Metroplexonians? That sounds awesome. Plexies? Well, plexies are definitely the, sort of square, well, cubicle, I guess, storage units that they use at Starbucks to, like, put the CDs in. That, if I recall correctly, they're not technically supposed to put the CDs in. So definitely plexis are out. I'm sure I have used in conversation one of those at some point. I will try to listen to myself more closely and see which one I use. I want to say I've used Metroplexins, but we'll see. I'll listen to myself more. I'll try to get back to you. Okay, and okay, this is where I leave a note saying that I'll be going camping, which was enjoyable. Okay, so Llama Man. So with the new content, a couple of things that were not issues seem to have become relevant. Variability of salvage results. Okay, so I'm not sure if these are questions so much as issues that I will, I guess, respond to. With Survivor's Quest, salvage is important to Lowe's and to a lesser extent David's Quest. Getting the salvaging tools is a problem. although they're much more important to get in run now. Once you get the tools, you need to acquire some metal powder, which requires you to get the right roll in a salvaging a suit, as well as a processor, which either requires you to purchase CS-110 to open up the lab and farm the recipe, or get lucky salvaging your Y-4. Since you get it for the quest anyways, I feel the processor drop being guaranteed from it wouldn't be an unreasonable thing to ask for. Yes, expert salvager would help, but it's extremely difficult to get in run. So, yeah, better odds guarantees of getting a good drop of salvages would be sweet. I think you're out of luck on that one, oh, man. The metal powder is something that's in there as planned, and is, if you think of it as a backstop against a backstop of luck balanced against the bad luck of getting several extra, like, containment suit tops and containment suit bottoms, or, you know, what have you, I think you'll feel a lot better about that. And I don't mind making people get more containment suit pieces. And as far as the salvaging for the processor, I don't mind people salvaging for processors. I think that's, you know, a good use of the resources you get in run. But the Lowe's quest is fundamentally about crafting. And so the primary intended way to get that component is through crafting. So, I mean, it's cool that you can salvage stuff for processors, but more likely the intended is to get some circuit fragments and some polysteel and combine them up. So, which involves, I mean, some swing, but that's life, I guess. Sort of on the same note, David's quest. I'm not going to feel bad about anything in David's quest being long, as a fair warning before I read the rest of this. If you go Ocean Eyes and bind the Ghoul King, you have to either farm a crown from the Ancient Trevor's Crest, assuming you haven't owned the ghost ship already, complete the ghost ship and turn in the Monarch's Crown, pay 100 clan cash for the orb. I'm going to assume you haven't tried that yet. Farm shark teeth for the other crown. I guess that you want us to either get the Ghoul's King finisher for David's quest if we bind the Ghoul King, but it seems like the Fae side has it much easier since they can actually get the Fae eggs to communicate and to do their quest. Okay. I guess I'm going to fall back on I don't really feel bad if any part of Dan's quest is long. Nor do I care about balance issues at this point with the Survivor's Quest between different branches, nor even if I did care, would David's rate very high on the ones that I needed to balance. I would rather, for a variety of reasons, most of which aren't readily apparent yet, but simplest explanation, at least explanation that I can say without revealing anything that I don't want to reveal. If David's quest were shorter than the others, that would cause some weirdness with the dynamic, because that is the least guaranteed of the quests, if that makes any sense. So, I would have to think long and hard about balancing David's quest to be the same length as the other branches. As such, it's not really intended to be. And it has other benefits, like access to giant fucking boatloads of content that the others don't have. Also, someone mentioned this possibly in chat. But during the Survivor's Quest money gets really hard to come by. Pretty much the only viable source of income is either grinding chests up to be Watson Jr., or, I guess, Clan Warfare set to Shakedown. And there's a lot of semi-required money sinks now as well. I guess selling gold coins works fairly well, which you'll get if you're farming up for a crown. There was some conversation on the forums. I'm not sure if it was before or after this question got posted, but there are a lot of things which are, quote, required, places where you spend money, which are only required for going the zero energy route through something. So, yes, clearly you want to buy the Omnitech Learn Top from campus if you can, because that's the only way you're going to get a computer without spending any energy on it, right? But there's a bunch of other ways to get computers that do cost energy. And if the Learn Top wasn't retardedly expensive, they wouldn't actually be options in any meaningful sense. So the fact that people are bitching about stuff like that being too expensive is a good thing. Yes, I don't want to blow my money on, you know, X, Y, or Z. Good, I made credits actually matter. But B, good, because that means that some of the other paths might get explored. So, you know, maybe you want to build your own computer, maybe you want to consider completing the first Ghoul quest. And getting one that way. Maybe, you know, there's some other nefarious directions you want to take that. And there's a bunch of other stuff that cost more or less money, depending on how you do them. It's my understanding that to get the stuff back, trigger shows up after you've actually picked a survivor, so any real reason to, that it couldn't be when that's unlocked without actually picking them, so we can spade the new contents with their full inventory easier. If this is, in fact, the case, never mind then. Yes, it's after you pick the survivor, and that's when the quest's over, so that's when you're done. You get to get your stuff back. And it would be weird to have it be before then. I'd be pretty intensely displeased to have it have to trigger when you've completed enough to choose somebody, but not, not happening, sorry. And a couple questions from Tech Runner to polish things off. Are you planning to implement leaderboards that are based on skill more than on obstinacy? I guess you mean obstinacy there. Maybe I'm thinking of the wrong word. But I'm going to answer your question and go on a related tirade rather than in the opposite order. What I think your question is if I will be implementing leaderboards that are based on single-run speed, like Kingdom of Loathing, rather than on like multi-run accomplishments. And the answer is, yeah, probably. If I do the monthly ones that I've been thinking about doing, that would be the sort of modus operandi. But now comes the tirade part. The idea of skill, like as something that exists in games, I think is, to put it politely, I think is a concept that is obfuscating rather than actually encouraging clearer national conversation. Which is to say, I think it's complete bullshit. And that, you know, whether we're talking about, you know, something like, you know, an MMO like Metropoxy or a CCG or tabletop role-playing game, where thankfully it doesn't come up quite so much, typically, or, you know, even like a professional sport, whatever, CCG, if I didn't say that, wherever you're talking about. And you, because what you'll end up with is it's a lot like having a conversation about art, right? And I don't mean like, you know, you're talking about, you know, what pointillism is, or whatever. You have conversations about art through, or, you know, making fun of modern art or whatever. What I mean is when you're having a conversation with someone about whether or not something is art, and they end up the same way. So you'll have, let's say, actually, I'm just gonna take an example that hopefully people can identify with. Magic the Gathering, a lot of other games have run into this, L5R, like any sort of CCG game. You have two guys standing across from each other, an all too common conversation. One of the dudes is saying that clearly the other guy is just playing, you know, cookie cutter bullshit decks constructed by, you know, WotC out of the last, you know, six sets they released, seven sets I guess, and he's just, you know, being led around doing whatever they say, coming out with these pre-built, pre-cooked decks, right? Whereas, you know, protagonist A is building out of, you know, the, you know, 10,000 or 20,000 or however many they have now, cards that have been released so far, right? And can, you know, is really, you know, building this grand design out of all of the resources that are available. And protagonist B, over on the right, is saying that protagonist A is, you know, just taking the same decks that people built, you know, 10 years ago, and is blowing, you know, $500 on the cards that it needs. And just using, you know, the creativity of others and an excess of free income to ride his way to the top. And that, on the other hand, his preferred skill test is building out of a, you know, unique, changing environment that requires adaptation and creation of new decks and doesn't grow segment. Okay, fine. The point here is that both of them are complete douchebags, right? Because they're both trying to say that their skill is more important than the other person's skill. And they're both remotely valid skills. And that's kind of as far as you can get with this. You'll get the same argument with, like, people playing WoW, right? You'll have person A saying, you know, WoW is a bullshit game, because all you do is, you know, click your, you know, your rotation of keys for your class, which is a gross oversimplification, but whatever. If you've been on the internet in, like, the last decade, you've talked to these people, or, you know, ignored these people, more than likely. And the person, well, like Swan was talking about, you know, how even if it was just that, like, they've put in, you know, the time, the learning, the strategic understanding of strategic choices on a more meta level, even if the game itself were purely scripted, you know, they're still making those decisions, right? And they're still, you know, both right and both douchebags. So, what it ends up coming down to, and I don't mean this as a day towards you, Tech Runner, at all, which is why I kind of answered your question, as I'm guessing you meant to be going off on this tirade afterwards, but when someone says, this game X doesn't require enough skill, it should require more skill, what they actually mean, the vast majority of the time, is these skills which I have are not rewarded by game X. I think my skills should be rewarded better. Occasionally they mean, like, I don't think that the skills that I wish I had were rewarded by any game X. I wish the skills I, you know, want were rewarded. But, you know, basically ends up being the same thing. And there is a root argument in there, in the depths, that I think is valid. But in general, it's just, it's not even like X is art, Y is not art. It's X is more art than Y. Like, comparing two, like, remotely arty movies, we'll say, like, oh, I'm not good with art films, but this is the sound of me petting my cat evilly, by the way. So, you know, it's not even just saying A is art, B is not art. It's film A is more art than film B. Assuming, you know, that film B is not like, you know, Piranha 3D or something. Unless you consider kitchen art form, in which case it becomes a giant thing again, right? Which is the very long version of saying, fuck that argument. The nugget of worthwhile design advice, that I think is in there, is that, like, everyone wants their skills to be rewarded. And I think that there's something to be said for rewarding, you know, not necessarily as many skills as possible, but looking over the skills that you can reward and deciding, you know, whether you're going to, consciously. And there's a secondary thing in the handful of cases that the argument is actually applied validly. There are games, mostly online, like, you know, War and Candyland, where no player is favored, right? Regardless of their personal traits, right? And those saying, you know, those games require more skill can actually have some meaning. Okay. Anyway. So I hope I answered your question at first, but I take issue with the general, like, X is skill, B is not skill sort of bullshit dick measuring that comes along with the gaming community. So yes, your WoW build is skill. Yes, headshotting someone in Halo is skill. Can we talk about something useful? I guess is the moral of the story there. Are you keeping track of which survivor you choose the most at the end of the current quest line, so we'll be able to develop an emotional relationship with said survivor once old time hits, thereby giving us use to the mysterious personal contact section of the contact page? I've been picking Amundsen just in case. She is pretty sweet. By which I mean, like, awesome sweet. Like, she'd buy you roses on Valentine's Day. Although she might. Who knows? Actually, I've thought on a number of occasions about, you know, romance in games. And it's come up in tabletop RPGs that I've run, mostly at least most epically, like, PC-PC rather than PC-NPC, which is kind of unhelpful in this case. But I don't feel as though I'd necessarily be super competent writing it. So I haven't gone that direction yet. The reason that it's being kept track of is that the person who you choose out of the survivor's quest is your primary contact going forward, and is actually the one who gives you the Old Town quest, and you get their version of the Old Town quest. Obviously, there are some shared resources, like, you know, Old Town. And, you know, the facility that you're in. But your actual your goals and the means towards those goals are different. And I think you can probably guess what those means are from what they've had you do already. So when Old Town hits, I guess, and from there on, if you don't like crafting, you probably shouldn't have chosen Moe to be your survivor. If you don't like hacking, you probably should have chosen Dr. Amundsen. If you don't like crazy etheric stuff, David, you know, right out. And if you don't like, you know, beating stuff in the face until it dies, hell is kind of a non-option. Just kind of why hell is the default. I mean, there's probably something to be learned from the, we'll call it the American cultural school of game design, that I consciously sat through and was like, you know, which of these should kind of be like the root, right, the default option, and that ends up almost not having to be by any means, but sort of making the most sense is violence. Something to think about, I suppose. So that's what you're choosing for. And I guess some thoughts on romance. And there are some other effects, which you might see later. But the personal contact section, and actually, everyone feel free to speak up, like, if this is remotely useful for you, if this is something you'd actually want. The personal contact section was intended to be a section for other players. So the sort of thing where, like, you'd click on it and fill their name into the messages, like a friends list, basically. And I just never really felt like that added a lot. I never really felt like it was needed. So I never went back and actually implemented it. So I've been just kind of letting that stagnate. And they're kind of one of two directions. If it's something that people would actually use, I would go ahead and fill that in at some point, revamping the contact screen. If it's something that people don't think they would use, I would also go back and revamp the contact screen, remove that section, and, you know, like, add in images for the, add in images and possibly short descriptions for the various contacts you have, that sort of thing. Either way, it would be just putting it on a burner, which would probably be a fair ways, not in the front, but I've just been kind of letting it rot one way or another. Now the credits actually matter in run, would you be ready to reconsider the way the chemistry paper works to avoid the possibility of reading a dozen plus of them without ever actually getting the chemistry powder recipe? I've been waiting to... get more stuff to add into it, if that makes any sense. So I've been waiting until there's more, you know, basic chemistry recipes like that to drop into them before I went ahead and did that. But actually, I have a sort of nefarious idea, which, if it works, I might be able to to go in and do that now. I'll think about that in a little more detail. Yeah, consider that on my plate. I will revamp those one way or another. Maybe add another way to get them, if there's one already. I don't think there is. Feel free to call me an idiot if there. So there's already a secondary way to get them. But anyway, yeah, I will, I'll rework those at some point. That one, actually, we'll probably have time for Halloween. Okay, well, it seems that we are done. I have not coughed up any important parts of my anatomy, which is pretty exciting. So, thanks for listening, thanks for playing, and I will endeavor to actually get out August's, which was July's, donation item out before the end of August. No promises, though. Yeah, maybe it'll be September. And yeah, that's about it. I've got, I'll be working a lot on the Halloween content coming up, so keep your eyes out for that. And other than that, there's quite a few like chunks of things that I'd like to get done before I start really churning away on the Old Time Quest. Possibly, thinking about that now, I might want to start on the Old Town Quest and drop those periodically as I do it, like I did through the Survivor's Quest, so that you don't get, like, content, and then, like, long pause. I'll think about that more. So, consider the schedule, I guess, as in flux as it always is. Until you hear back from me. Okay. Anyway. You don't have to listen to me yammer anymore. Have a good one. Hope you don't get this cold wherever you are. And I will be posting a thread sometime before the August item, donation item comes out, asking about the future of donation items and how they'll be rotating. So keep your eyes up for that. Thanks. Have a good one.